Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man.
You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the measuring stick. Let's go, hook him up!
By my co-host Couture. What's going on, Couture?
Not much. What's going on?
Not too much. Just wondering if our other co-host is calling in tonight or if he died of food poisoning or whatever the hell he had last night. Because he has yet to appear on the switchboard.
Hmm.
So he might be in bed dying right now for all we know. So who knows if Craig will be joining us. And it might be better if he just stays in bed because, let's be honest, he was horrible last night on the Brian and Vinny show.
I only listened to the last part. I did. He was okay.
He was horrible. He was almost, by the time he was getting ready to do the plug for this show, I was almost like screaming, don't do it. Don't do it. We're going to lose listeners because of you. But, I'm going to assume that there's no Craig calling in tonight. Are you on the switchboard, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay, kind of keep an eye on it, because if I'm not mistaken, I think Brutal Bob is calling us.
Okay,
And I'm not at home. I'm actually at Barb's using her tiny little computer, but I got to kind of move around here and there.
Well, I noticed it was the last second that you finally got on the switchboard.
Oh, yeah, I kind of had to do a couple little things real quick. I got on right on fucking time. I couldn't believe it. I was crazy because because I'm on her computer, because then I had to also log in. So I logged in, and then I finally got to, I pushed studio, and I was just screaming, hurry up, hurry. But, yeah, luckily that worked out. So, you know, I did my best to be professional, even though Craig is, that is a little sickness causing him to be unprofessional and not be on the show so far. But
bad day today.
What's that?
Bad day today.
Bad day today?
My Graham died.
Oh, yeah. I saw that just not too long ago, man. Mike Graham committed suicide today, didn't he?
Yeah. It's kind of eerie because, you know, his dad did the same thing back in 1985.
Yeah. Gunshot wound to the head. I mean, it's weird. You haven't really heard too much of Mike Graham, like, the last year or so. I mean, he was, you know, on a bunch of the, like, WWF DVDs, like the Dusty Rose one and a few other ones. And, but lately I haven't heard too much about him. I wonder what was up to make him want to do that. I mean, I'm kind of curious to find out what the whole story is.
I don't know. It's kind of strange since his dad did the same thing, so.
Yeah. And wasn't
it? I think the last time I saw him was, what, maybe in the Hall of Fame a few years ago? He was in the Hall of Fame. he accepted his dad's thing for the Hall of Fame a few years ago, right?
I believe so. I can't.
Yeah.
I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
I mean, he's I guess the newer fans, he's probably more famous for either two things, for either taking the squeegee away from Sid,
or creating professional wrestling,
or claiming he invented everything.
He took the squeegee away from Sid. That was an awesome story. I was actually reading that the other day in an Old Observer.
Yeah, which is kind of funny because Mike Graham is, what was he? He was very, very short. He was a little dude.
Yeah, he was about, I don't know, maybe 5'8 or something like that.
Yeah. And but he was always like, he was a little dude, but he was like a power lifter type dude. So he was pretty strong, but I mean, he was a little dude. And
pulled a knife on Benoit one time.
Oh, really? I don't know that story.
When they were trying to get, when the they had gotten together and they wanted Kevin Sullivan out as the booker in WCW,
uh-huh.
When they had gotten rid of Russo and then brought Sullivan back in as the booker, and, you know, that's when all the radicals ended up leaving to go to WWF. I think it was in 2000, and he kind of took offense at them trying to get Sullivan fired, and he pulled a knife on him.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Maybe he should have done something with that knife. Maybe things wouldn't have gotten worse. I don't know. Maybe history would have changed.
It just would have got worse a lot sooner. I mean, it's not like somebody would have died regardless.
Well, a child wouldn't have died.
Yeah, that's true. The main matches I remember he wrestled for WCW for a short period, and that's mainly how I remember him.
Yeah, I
never really saw too much of his floor stuff.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of. I didn't see too much of his floor stuff. I remember in WCW, he was like in light heavyweight division and stuff like that. He's good to, you know, go out and have a good match with, but I really never saw him do anything other than that.
Yeah, I just know he was like a big star in Florida, but like you say, other than that, I really don't know a whole lot about the dude.
Yeah.
So had you sent any news to Craig, or had you heard
from
Craig?
No, because I figured
I see a message on my Facebook from Craig, actually. I guess it didn't. My phone didn't fucking notify me for some reason. Ed, I can't do the show tonight. I have been throwing up so hard that I do not have my voice. Sorry, man. Well, that's just unprofessional, Craig. Just very unprofessional. Let's see here. I'm trying to see if I can find if he told me. Okay, I'm going to have to check my text then. Because I can't find whether he said to call Bob or Bob was calling us.
It said he was going to call us about 5 minutes after. That's what I read on Facebook.
Okay, then. Okay, cool, then. So we'll just wait for Bob to call in. If I can get this damn. Okay. But I'm sorry, what were you saying about the news?
Actually,
I see a caller on the line, so let me take the call here. Caller calling from area code 508. Who's this?
This is Brutal Bob Evans. What's up, boys? How you doing?
What's going on, Bob? How you doing tonight?
All right. And don't panic. I'm here. I'm sorry I'm a couple minutes late, but I figured I would come in just at the last minute and save the day. But not that your show needs saving, but it's how you guys doing tonight?
We're doing pretty good.
Good. What's the word? What have you guys been up to? I haven't talked to you guys in a while.
Well, actually, we've been making fun of Craig the last couple minutes because he's in home bed throwing up, and he's not going to be able to do the show tonight.
Oh, yeah, I heard him on Brian yesterday. He did not sound well at all, so.
Yeah, he sounded horrible, actually.
Yes, he does, so. Hopefully he doesn't look as half as bad as he sounds, you know.
Actually, if you've ever met Craig, you know, you wouldn't have.
I love Craig. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Come on, don't start rumors.
Well, Bob, the reason we're having you on is because very soon it's going to be a very big week for you.
That's right.
I'm,
Iron Week starts Sunday, November 25th, and concludes Saturday, December 1st. And I don't know if you've had a chance to tell anybody what it's all about, but yeah, I, at 40 years old, I've decided to be basically a complete idiot and wrestle 7 one-hour Ironman matches in a row with seven of the, in my opinion, seven of the guys that I didn't really look at this until recently, but a friend of mine pointed out, because I just thought it was a lot of people I respected in the business and a lot of people I just wanted to wrestle. And he pointed out, he said, did you realize that these are probably seven of the most overlooked or underappreciated guys in the business right now? And I said, wow, that's an excellent point. So I don't know if I did it consciously or subconsciously, but we already have a few matches scheduled. Sunday, of course, we kick it off with former ECW World Champion Steve Corino and current Ring of Honor Tag Team Champion. And so that'll be the first one. Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday right now, guys, are still up in the air due to scheduling. And I can tell you that Thursday is one of the real bright lights in the New England wrestling industry up here, Julian Starr. That'll be Thursday night. And then Friday night's going to be Antonio the Promise Thomas. He's actually taking the place of Mike Mondo, who unfortunately is laid up with a broken foot that he suffered at the hands of my prodigy, Mike Bennett, last week in Canada at the pay-per-view, the Ring of Honor's pay-per-view. So, and then, like I said, the final night is still up in the air. So we do have a few days scheduled, but some of the other guys I'll be wrestling are Adam Cole, Ring of Honor TV champion, Delirious, and, of course, we all know who Delirious is. He's had his name in the paper the last couple days. Of course, geez, I don't even have the stupid list right in front of me, guys. I'm sorry. My head's been all over the place. I have this committed to memory so much now I don't even I don't have it down like I should. I'm so sorry. Vinny Marcellia, of course. Vinny's another New England standout and actually should be seeing some time in the national scene soon. Because I know Ring of Honor thinks very highly of Vinny and hopefully give him some opportunities too. So, you know, that'll be an exciting opportunity for both of us. So I am very excited for this, guys, and I'm tired. I'm sorry. I actually dozed off a little bit, which made me late because my training has been insane because at 40 I don't have the chance to just lean back and eat hot dogs and drink sodas and stuff like I did when I was 25. So I've just been really pressing it as hard as I can in the gym and, you know, studying my wrestling, studying up on these guys. And so it should be quite a week. So sorry to ramble on there, but I just want to try to get all that information out. So
now, how hard is it to set up shows in the middle of the week, like, say, Tuesday and Wednesday?
Well, this is how I'm going to do it. Actually, when I did it 3 years ago, and I did it 6 days, and we actually based out of one little hall in Connecticut. But of course, the attendance wasn't great in the middle of the week, as you can guess. So what we're doing this time to keep it a little bit, make it a little more visually appealing, and just make it a little easier for everybody, is I'm going to go to those people. And we're actually going to make a reality web series out of it. So I'm going to get a Kickstarter going for that soon. But we're actually going to – so this stuff is all going to air. So we're going to get everything online as quickly as possible. And I'm going to go to – like, as far as I know, I'm going to be in the Pennsylvania area wrestling a lot of the Pennsylvania-based guys like Delirious and Adam Cole. And, of course, I'm sorry, guys. One of the guys I forgot was Grizzly Redwood, one of my heroes in wrestling. That was the seventh man. I'm glad I last but not least. But so it's going to be easier for me to go there and for everybody's budget. You know, like I said, these guys have you know, pretty much volunteered to do this just to help, you know, help the cause. And then the only real – and then I'm going to do a couple wrestling schools. Actually, Antonio Thomas, I'm going to wrestle at his wrestling school. And we're going to almost make it like a training exercise for his students, where his students sit down and watch – and just watch us wrestle for an hour. And then the day before, on the Thursday, when I wrestle Julian Starr, it's going to be the same kind of thing where we wrestle at Brian Fury's New England Pro Wrestling Training Center, and in North Andover, Massachusetts, near Boston. So that's where Julian trains out of, and that's they're all good friends of mine over there, and I go up there and guest train once in a while. So we're going to do it that way. It's a little more cost effective, and you know the guys are nice enough to welcome our cameras in. And actually, you probably saw Brian's school a couple weeks ago on TNA, because when that young man Evan Markopoulos, they showed him training. That's actually where he was training at. So
okay.
Yeah, so, and Brian's an excellent trainer and, you know, had a huge hand in training Evan, and I really thought Evan should have probably gotten a nod on the TNA deal, but what are you going to do? So, but anyway, back to Iron Week. But that's the only real show event is going to be the last night in my hometown of Swansea, Massachusetts, which is about 60 miles south of Boston. It's going to be at my high school, and it's actually going to be a fundraiser for autism. We're trying to hook up with Autism Speaks, but if I can't get an official nod from them, because I know sometimes it's funny with those national organizations, they sometimes don't like to lend themselves to professional wrestling because of the violence aspect, even though I'm going to try to pitch it to them that this is something different. But if not, I'll just take the money and I'll just donate it to them as just a separate donation. My son is on the autism spectrum, and I'm really not... You know, I don't want to parade my son around for pro wrestling reasons because he's, you know, he's six and he's actually doing really, really well. There's a lot of kids that are doing a lot worse than him. But we caught his particular syndrome early, so he's actually doing really, really well. But there's quite a few guys actually in the wrestling business that have kids that are dealing with this. So it's special to me and it's special to a lot of guys. So we're trying to give back. I'm not very good at just going by and writing a check for, you know, $25 to my different causes. So this is the way I kind of do it to give back to the community. So
that's cool.
Yeah.
So. Now the first thing you mentioned, Steve Cirino, everybody
yes.
knows Steve Cirino, and everyone knows that Steve Cirino is an awesome, awesome wrestler.
Yes.
And just everything he does is awesome. Just one thing, he doesn't seem like a cardio machine. Did you have to talk him into this, or?
Well, actually, he was one of the first guys. I mentioned it to a while ago. A little story about Steve was that I've told him this to his face, so this is not talking out of school, and this is not sensationalistic at all. But I didn't really like Steve Cirino. I didn't think he was very good. This was a while ago, obviously. I hadn't seen him in years. But I didn't. Of course, you know, you hate everybody you don't know, right? One of those things, typical wrestling business. But when I finally got to know Steve and I saw how much he did for Mike Bennett a couple of years ago when they were feuding and how much he sacrificed himself and really tried to help Mike get over, I was like, this guy's really shown me a lot. And then I know Steve was kind of down and out right before he hooked up with Kevin Steen again. And then now I'm real proud of him because he's probably – you know, he's hooked up, his personal life is really clicking, they've won the tag team titles, he's probably lost about 20-25 pounds, if not more. I'm sorry, Steve, if it's more, but he's actually really doing well as far as physical fitness, and Steve knows how to go. You know, Steve's wrestled long matches, but when I brought it up to him, he was like, that sounds great, man, I'm all about it. So he was very supportive of it right away, so... And he's actually, unfortunately, he has to come in from, he moved a little more down south, so he's, I think he's in the Carolinas now, so instead of in the Philly area when we originally planned it, so he's actually going to come up and come up on his own dime to actually help this situation out. So, because I told him, I said, you know, I understand you're a lot further away now, and he's like, no, man, I'll be there. So, you know, for all the evil things he does, sometimes Steve has a good heart, so, and like I said, this is... you know, it's kind of good for both of us because, you know, I look at Steve and I look at a guy who could be utilized, and I'm glad they're utilizing him a lot better now. But for a while, I really thought he wasn't being utilized well. And, you know, in all due respect to Ring of Honor, I still think I could be utilized a lot better too. And this is kind of an audition as well, saying, look, this guy can, you know, I can do a lot more. It's definitely not like a FU or anything like that. I'm very happy with my position. I feel like I've been treated extremely fairly and very well. So I'm not bitter. I'm not mad. I just think they've had more priorities, obviously. So this is a way for me to kind of just, you know, raise my hand and say, hey, look, guys, I'm here and I can add a lot more to the picture. And I think can do that with just about any of the guys. But I think Steve is definitely one of those guys that can add a lot more to the mix. And I'm hoping we'll really we've only wrestled one time a couple years ago, and I really enjoyed the match, and it was I thought it was really good, and Steve showed me a lot. You know, not that he had to, but he did. And that wasn't in front of a lot of people, so he didn't have to put forward that much effort. And, you know, I really liked it. So it was cool to wrestle him, and it would be great to wrestle him again, and it's one of the reasons why I wanted to kick it off with him. So.
Did he, when you wrestled him, did he do, like, cause one of my favorite things that he does is the, I don't know how to describe it, the thumb spot, I guess.
Oh, yeah, I was a victim. Well, I was a victim with that when I was seconding Mr. Bennett to the ring on national TV, and then I was just the subject to that at this little show in, right outside of Worcester, Massachusetts, a couple of years ago too. Yeah, so yes, I have been subject to that. It's not one of my proudest moments. It's not something I would ask for again. So we may have to. Maybe one of the riders in the match. We may have to outlaw the thumb. So we'll have to talk about that. We'll have to have our people sit down. Maybe you can be the mediator, Ed. You know, we'll demonstrate it on you. And you can see if it's something that's pertinent to the match.
The first time I saw him do that was the ROH show's WrestleMania weekend in Arizona.
Oh, yeah.
And he did it to Generico, and I think at the end, Generico did it back to him and got revenge. So.
Oh, well, of course. I mean, you know, there's another guy who's just unbelievable, you know. So I wish I had more bad stuff to say about people, but, you know, I'm kind of glad Generico's going to come back and contribute what he can to Ring of Honor, because just another fantastic, underutilized guy. So.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question, since you are with Ring of Honor. Like, they had did the angle where they gave Sting the mask at the end of the show. Now, I could have swore I might have read somewhere like the day or two after that Generico actually wasn't signed or wasn't coming back, but he actually is.
Well, from what I understand, there was a parting of the ways, and I can't tell you if it was amicable or not, because I try not to get into the back office stuff as much as possible, because the more I find out about that stuff, the more I can get myself in trouble. But from what I understand, it was fairly amicable. There was never like screw you and I'm walking out or you're fired. There was nothing like that. It was just, I believe. And please, if anyone out there can correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not speaking out of turn, but I'm just kind of guessing here. I believe his contract ran out, and then he wanted to pursue other things and see if he could, check on things and see if he could maybe better himself in the industry. And I don't know what that entailed. I don't know if that meant contacting some of the other offices or whatnot. So. And then I think it was, so they shot that big angle where they gave him that big move in New York to kind of set things up, and then that could have been left either way. That could have been left with him dying and never coming back, or it could be now 6 months, you know, 4 months later, 5 months later, here comes the box, and here it is. So I think there was always a plan for him to come back in some capacity. I don't know if that means every event. I don't know if that means every other event. I don't know if that means once or for the next 25 years. I really couldn't tell you. But as far as I was concerned, I thought it was cool what they did, but it didn't shock me or anything. I just was like, hey, that's pretty cool. It's good, you know? So.
I think they reported in the Observer today that...
let Cotreo talk, will you?
Let me talk. I was going to say...
Hi, Cotreo. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Excellent, excellent.
I was going to say, I read in the Observer today that I think they were trying to do a Fiend Generico match in Final Battle this year.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what, as soon as I saw that angle, that's kind of what I thought they were going. So, you know, I pretty much stay out of the booking. Most of the booking is a surprise to me, even our stuff when they tell me. So, you know, you can speculate on some of the stuff. I mean, they're obviously, I know I know Brian was going over, Brian Alvarez, for the people who don't know who the hell we're talking about, was talking about the situation between Hunter and Jim, and I can tell you that those guys, there's no heat there, there's no issue there, those guys work very well together. I think it's just, I think with Jim doing so much on the TV production end. I know he wasn't happy with some of the stuff that he felt like he could control, so I think he's going to concentrate more on the TV production end and try to tweak that stuff and streamline that stuff and not have to worry about the booking as much. And I think Hunter enjoyed that stuff more anyway and has more of a creative mind, and I think he has a better vision isn't the right way, because I always felt like Jim had a great vision. And, you know, the good ideas and the bad ideas were both. So we can't blame one guy over the other. And we can't praise and we can't criticize without criticizing both, because, like I said, they were never – if I asked somebody, like, oh, whose idea was that? They'd always say both of ours. There was never he came up with this good idea and I came up with this bad idea, or vice versa. So it was always very – all for one and one for all, and I don't expect it to be any different. In fact, I know Jim has said on several occasions that Hunter's easily the best guy he's ever worked with in that capacity. So, and I thought that was one of the highest compliments since all the people he's worked with. So I know that, but I know the crew was very excited because now it all funnels through one guy. I think, you know, from what I understand, aside from the injuries that we sustained last week, which was unfortunate, to Mondo, and I know Truth got a little banged up. And I know one of the bravados got a busted up nose, but aside from that, I guess it was really good. I guess I don't know exactly what the buys were, but I guess they were better than expected. So that's even better. So it was good day. So
that's good.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Jim Cornette delirious thing, I don't actually understand why it became such a big story, because to me, it's like nothing's really changed. I mean, they always said that Cornette was the booker or whatever it was. To me, I always thought it was just something more for St. Clair to have more of a name person, maybe just to satisfy St. Clair. But I was always under the impression that it was the same before St. Clair, and it's, you know, the same now. So I don't really understand why it really became such a news item.
Well, I mean, looking on stepping back and looking at it, and this is me looking at it as just a guy who works in the company. Like I said, nobody really talks to me about this stuff because I try to stay stupid on it. But I the way it looked to me, just because I've worked in the corporate circles before and I've worked with companies that are, you know, just going through growing pains and things like that, it just looked like more of like a redefining of the roles to make it easier for everybody. Because I know if I had, I had a couple of ideas that I wanted to pitch, and I wasn't sure who to talk to, and I didn't want to talk to one guy and leave another guy out, and I didn't, you know, that kind of a thing. I didn't want to leave anybody in the dark, so I would email, you know, my idea to both of them, but I never was really sure who was taking a bigger hand in that, and I didn't want to waste the other guy's time. So this way now it's just kind of a restating of, hey guys, everything goes through Delirious TV production. You'll see me all the time. I'll be producing promos. I'll be at TV. It's not like I'm going to disappear, but this way it just goes all through Hunter, and I think it's just going to be better that way. Because this way we're not. You're talking to one person instead of two, so that's just a little more streamlined. That's all, and I think. And like I said, I mean, I do not subscribe to this, but I've heard, you know, we've all heard the stuff, the little grapevine that, you know, Cornette's out of touch and all this. And like I said, I do not subscribe to that. I think Jim's as in touch as any other guy, and Jim's one of the best bookers of all time. I just, you know, right now I just think that he has so much responsibility on the other end, and I think that's really what he wants to do anyway. I think he wants to be the guy that helps the TV production and is the liaison between Ring of Honor and Sinclair, where he can, if Ring of Honor has some issues where, hey, we need some extra money, but we have to justify it, maybe Jim can take it to Sinclair and say, hey, this is what the deal is, you know, like, this is why, you know, and I think it's just a way to streamline everything, that's all. So I don't know how to explain it any other way. And that's just like I said, I may be totally wrong, too, so...
I was going to say, speaking of Delirious, we had him on the show, I guess, a few years ago, and he did an hour interview in character, and we had one of the guys that would be at the school. I don't remember if it was like Rip Titus or Grizzly Wedgwood or Dempsey, but it was one of those guys, and we kind of asked him how he was at the school, and they pretty much said that he's in character when he's training at the school. And my question is, What is it like actually talking to Hunter and not Delirious?
Well, I have like one of those, like, I have a helmet that I wear, a special helmet that I wear that actually brings in his frequency. So he actually speaks perfect English when I put on the helmet. So that's why, but it cost me like $4,000 on eBay. So, you know, but no, it's, he is very, well, I'll put it to you this way, because I don't want to hurt anything that, I don't want to hurt any of his business, but I can tell you that he is very protective of Delirious. And Hunter Johnston, when I speak to him, is a creative man, a thoughtful man, an incredibly smart man, a kind guy, and very underrated. I can't say it enough. If they fired me tomorrow, I'd say the same thing. It wouldn't change. And like I said, extremely underrated as a trainer. And I've trained with him. I've trained for him. I'm one of the few guys that's actually, we have another tryout/seminar coming up in December, and he and I are one of the few guys that's been to every single one. And I started trying out at the first one, and now I actually help facilitate it with him. And it's a pleasure. It's always a pleasure standing next to him. And you know, it's like when Sacha Baron Cohen does Borat. And, you know, then I heard him on Howard Stern as himself, and he was, like, this super interesting guy. It's almost like I feel like if Delirious would let Hunter Johnston out for an hour just to kind of talk, I think people would be really impressed. But like I said, he does protect it. He wears his mask pretty much at all times. He'll wear it at shows. He'll wear it at training. If there's a camera around, he'll wear it. Just very protective, you know, and I like that. I think that's smart. I think that speaks to, you know, the way he wants to protect his business. And like I said, the gimmick's awesome. And like I said, he's a great person. A very artistic guy, very creative guy, very open-minded guy, because that was one of the things I was nervous about. I said, geez, I'm kind of like a Dick Murdoch and guys like that, very, you know, fairly traditional. I can do a few cool things, but I'm kind of a traditional guy. I'm going to go into this camp. I don't know what, you know, that was one of the things I was most nervous about. I'm really good at doing that stuff. I'm good at what I do and being a brutal Bob Evans, but I'm nervous about being a quote-unquote Ring of Honor guy, whatever that is. And rest assured that he was a big fan of mine and still continues to be and a big supporter of mine. So I'm actually hoping that with Hunter kind of being that guy in charge, maybe I'll get a few more opportunities. I'm not politicking for it right now because I know I have to earn that spot, but I'm excited about having a good, clean slate to work with and maybe getting a few more chances. So.
Well, speaking of chances, not too long ago at one of the pay-per-views, you actually wrestled Adam Cole in a TV title match.
I did.
And,
he was one
of the guys you got wrestling coming up. How did you enjoy wrestling with Adam? Because he really does seem like he's one of the best new talents. I don't know if he has the size just yet to make it maybe to WWE, but as far as talent, I mean, the dude is pretty phenomenal. And what are your thoughts on Adam Cole?
I do. I agree with you completely, Ed. You know, I think Adam Cole is one of the best young talents around, and it'll be, I hate to sound like Les Thatcher, because Les always goes, oh, it's been 50, and it has been 50 years, and God bless him, but it'll only be 21 for me next February, but in the 20-plus years, I mean, he's one of the most impressive young men that I've seen come out, as far as just being well-spoken and just well, you know, well thought out and just knowing how to articulate and speak on behalf of the company and speak on behalf of himself. And then, like I said, he's got, you know, he's a good looking young guy and he can wrestle and he can do the quote unquote Ring of Honor style. And he can, you know, he can also slow it down and do what I like to do and be more of a traditional babyface heel match. And, you know, I really enjoyed wrestling him. That's one of the reasons why I picked him again. But I had actually picked him out like a year and a half ago when I thought about doing this. So,
ROH, Adam's for the most part, Adam's a babyface in ROH.
Yep.
And he's really good at that in the babyface role.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard he's
the hero when he won the PWG tournament a few weeks ago. And I've heard that he does that even better. Have you seen him or worked with him when he's doing the heel and not the babyface?
No, I've heard he does a pretty good job at it. So I'm if that ever comes into play, I'd like to see it, you know, because I could obviously give him some pointers on that too if I saw it. So, and that's another thing too is he's always looking to better himself. You know, that's one thing about Adam Cole is that's why I think he's going to make it. And I agree with you; he's not the biggest guy, and I think that it's going to take him a little while longer to get maybe WWE to answer the door if that's his final goal. I don't know what his final goal is, so I'd love to have him in Ring of Honor forever. But I understand that the money, you know, he has a good solid girl that he's with, and I think they're going to settle down. And so I think if you're going to start a family, I think you need to start thinking about doing this for financial reasons as well, and setting yourself up. And that's where WWE comes into play. And I certainly understand that. And if he's going to do that, then I think it's probably going to take him a little longer to get them in to answer the door. But I think that'll be better for him anyway, because I think when he walks in, he has to be awesome. Like, he can't be just really good. He has to be awesome, because that's one of the things with Brian that I think really Daniel Bryan. This is Bryan Danielson. Daniel, he had so much experience that when he walked in, I think people were kind of blown away with how much he knew. And he was never going to get in trouble, and he was never going to mouth off to anyone or say something stupid. So that was never an issue. So I think it took him longer to get there, but when he got there, he's super over now, you know. So, and probably making $8,000 a week too, so that's not bad. So, I think Adam's going to have to take that same route. And I think Adam's really young too. I think he's 22 or 23, so he has time. And he's had really good, solid, good start to the business as far as like working with a lot of different guys and working with some really good talent. So I think, like you said, I think his size might be a detriment, but I think if he just plays his cards right and just gets a lot of that experience, I think he's going to be fine. So, cause everything else is just A+. So.
Cool. Couture, question?
Yeah. What do you think about the state of ROH right now? Cause it's been kind of a challenging year.
It's been a very challenging year, and if I told you everything was fantastic, and I can't believe how much money I made this year, and it's we all laugh and sing songs while we run to the bank, I'd be joking, you know. I mean, we've actually had a few meetings about it where we've, you know, had some rough times with the pay-per-views not broadcasting on certain broadbands and or bandwidths. I'm sorry, and just different things and injuries and, you know, I mean, Tommaso's out for a year and now Mondo might be out for a year. And I mean, these are two guys that were just starting to really, I mean, Mondo was really kind of was like a slow burn guy who was just getting over despite people thinking that he was just not going to get over. And then Tommaso, I think it just started hitting his stride, and then he goes down with the ACL. It's like, you know, and I've known Tommaso for years cause he's been up here. So it's just very frustrating, you know? And, you know, so it's been a very frustrating year, and you know, the attendance hasn't always been the way we wanted it to. We've had some real good highs too. I mean, we've had some great shows in New York. Providence was sold out. Baltimore TV has been real solid as far as attendance goes. Very supportive. I mean, the Baltimore fans have really, I mean, everybody's over in Baltimore. If I go out there, they love me, they hate me, whatever. They're just excited to see us. We're TV stars there, but we need to do more of that. And I think it's the same critiques I would say of anybody. It's the same critiques I would say of any companies around here, the ones that run around here. You need more boots on the ground, more local promotion. We need to tell more people who we are and what we do. And I just, and to tell you the truth, I don't know what that formula is. Is it just, you know, to getting a few more guys and or, you know, hiring some college interns and having them do it, kind of like minor league baseball does. I don't know what the magic formula is, but I know we're trying to flip that switch and make it happen. I mean, we've had some real positive things happen this year, but as far as, like, I think the biggest thing is just we have to streamline that pay-per-view and make that, because our pay-per-view was awesome last week. It was like, if the New Japan pay-per-view didn't happen, that would definitely be the pay-per-view of the year. And it's just disappointing because, you know, there were still some people who don't trust us. And to be honest with you, I mean, if I've been burned a couple of times, I'd be like, screw this, man. I'm not going to, you know, I understand they're growing and they're a young company and, you know, but, you know, again, it comes back to a broadcast a broadcast company who can't broadcast shows, you know, and I've heard that a lot. It's not, I'm not being a wise ass and I'm not crapping on my own company. I'm just saying I've heard that from a lot of people. That's been the biggest thing. And what we have to do and what I think they are doing is just taking responsibility for it and changing it. So, and like I said, I think there's going to be some shakeups in talent. I don't necessarily think there's going to be guys that are going to get run out the door, but I think we're going to start looking at mixing in a more young talent, mixing up the card, getting a few different guys in, and I think that's great. I know they already looked at that kid ACH, who I've heard nothing but great things about. I know Bobby Fish was used, and I have great respect for Bobby. I've known Bobby for years. Bobby's a good friend and just, you know, gets better and better every single time I see him, and he's another veteran guy with worldwide experience that can bring something else to the table. It looks like Davey Richards is over whatever personal stuff or professional stuff he was dealing with, and from you know, from my point of view, aside from beating my guy Bennett, which pissed me off, I've seen a good side of Davey Richards, a lot more relaxed. And, you know, a relaxed, loose Davey Richards is a dangerous guy because he's usually very wound up. And my whole thing with Davey Richards is, as I said, if he just lets himself kind of just remember that he got into wrestling to actually have fun and have a good time, and it's not much different than when we did it on the indies for $5 a piece, then I think he'll actually, you know, get back to kind of getting back to where he was. So, but that's the biggest thing, guys, is just, you know, taking responsibility for the screw-ups, which are completely on us. Can't blame you, can't blame Dave Meltzer, can't blame Wade Keller, can't blame somebody else. We have to blame ourselves, you know.
You can blame Brian. I mean,
well, you know, Brian's a shooter now. I can't blame Brian. I could blame Brian when he couldn't fight me for real. But so Brian was actually one of the guys considered for Iron Week before he retired. So that's serious. That's a serious thing too. I'm not even messing with you. So, but he said right now he's concentrating more on the Brazilian stuff, and I said, well, I'm only into the phony stuff, so I can't fight you right now. So,
how come you didn't pick Craig?
Craig? Hey, I would have taken Craig. Craig chimes in, man. Craig was there for a word of support, just like you were, Ed, you know. Contreras, I'm not messing with you, buddy. I just know these guys a little longer. But, you know, there were a lot of people that were very supportive of this and still are, and I'm very grateful for it because when I put this out there, I was like, am I going to get laughed at? Are people going to think I'm a moron? I don't care if people think I'm crazy. That's fine. But I just didn't want people to think, oh, he's embarrassing himself and all this because, you know, in my opinion, I think in the few matches I did have this year, I think I actually showed people that I could go a little bit, and I think they were surprised by that. So that was one thing I was pretty proud of this year. So, but I want to show them that I can do more, and I want to show them that I'm capable of really turning it up and adding a lot more to Ring of Honor, you know.
Do you think people underestimate you because you look older than you are?
I think people underestimate me because of that. I also think people underestimate me because I'm, quote-unquote, a career indie guy. That was kind of due to my own responsibility, so I'm not bitter at all. Like, I know that's the whole gimmick, that he's this bitter guy, but I'm not bitter at all. Anything I didn't do in wrestling was due to me. I'd love to blame other people and all that stuff, but it was due to me. So, and like I said, I've had people, and I'm not, this is going to sound very damning of the WWE, and I do not want to damn them, because they've done a lot of good in the industry too, but I've had people going, a lot of my friends have gone into the WWE developmental system, and not as many have come out. You know, we've had people go crazy, we've had people, I had one of my buddies, you know, kill himself due to drugs. And that wasn't, WWE didn't give him drugs, but it was one of the, you know, it was just that crazy system that they put you through. And like I said, I've had a bunch of my friends come back, and it's almost like, with all due respect to our veterans, it just seems like they've come back from a war. They just come back in shell shock. And and I looked at that and I said, I have a fantastic wife me and my wife have had quite a history where I've had to basically just get down on my knees and beg her to take me back. And then we've had two wonderful kids. My son turned 6 on Halloween, and my daughter turned 4 about a month ago. And I have an incredible family, and I don't want to leave them half the week because they're awesome. I work third shift. I come home. I take my kids to school. I do my little eBay business, and I do my all little other side stuff, and I work on Iron Week, and then I pick up my kids, and I see my kids every day. And I eat dinner with my wife probably 5-6 nights a week, unless I have shows on the weekends. And it's a nice life. I got nothing to complain about. So I don't want to, you know, anything I didn't want to do was because of me. And the Ring of Honor thing fits in perfectly. So, yeah, I think the fact that I never really pushed to be in WWE is one of the things. And I just kind of – I took, like, 8 years out of my career to just start training guys, too. I turned 100 guys and girls pro, and I actually had Taylor went to TNA this year. She was on Gut Check. She got signed. And then I had one of my first WWE guy, Chase Donovan, got signed to Developmental. So it's been a good year. But, again, you know, I trained a lot of guys and girls that just do it for fun and just try to do it the best they can. And that was really what I concentrated on for years. And when I was 36, a couple of buddies of mine were like, you know, I said, I'm too old to make a run at this. And they're like, why are you too old to make a run at this? Why don't you just do it on your own terms, you know? And then another buddy of mine said, I just heard that Cornette might be going back to Ring of Honor if TNA thing doesn't work out. And I've been friends with Jimmy for years. And I knew that that wouldn't really help me except give me a name value with him. And he knew that I was a guy that was a good guy and he could give me an opportunity. He wouldn't give me anything else. So, and then when I went to the tryout camp and I just, you know, I'd lost 40 pounds for it. I had really prepared myself physically and mentally. And me and Bennett were the stars of the camp. And I'm not saying that. That's pretty much the other everybody else saying it. And we both got signed. Now, granted, I got signed to be a manager, and he got signed to be a wrestler. And Jim Cornette told me in 2010 that he didn't see me wrestling in Ring of Honor. And I respectfully, because Jim's a friend of mine, I respectfully said I would prove him wrong. And, you know, a year and a half later, I did. So, and I calculated it. It took me 7,497 days until I got my first national TV match of any significance. So it's been a long road, guys, but it's been it'll make a good book someday. But it's, you know, like I said, I was like a career indie guy, you know, and I've looked the same pretty much since I was 30 and now till I'm 40. I mean, I looked 40 when I was 30 and I looked 45 when I'm 40. So, you know, they rib me and they say I'm 48 and it makes me mad, I think that's what it is. That I think it's just, I think I just get overlooked because they just started me as, you know, an older guy who was seconding Mike Bennett to the ring. You know, it's not their fault. That's great. It's a spot. It's a spot on TV. I was very complimented, and they said you can help Mike while he's doing this, and I have, and I've tried to help as many young guys as I can, and you know, but then I just said, hey, I still can wrestle. I still can go. You know, I'm having good matches with guys on the independents. I want to bring it to Ring of Honor, bring what I can do. Doesn't mean I win all the belts and run over and do a ride back and beat two guys at a time. It just means that maybe they get to wrestle me and maybe they get the hand raised at the end, but maybe they learn, you know, maybe they learn something at the end of it, and that'll help them move on to the next guy. There used to be a bunch of us back when I started. There were a bunch of old guys that would help push you along, and now there's basically no one. So that's why I'm offering to be one of those old guys that helps push these young bastards along. So
I hope that answers your question. What's your opinion of the whole Gut Check thing with TNA, since you brought it up a couple of times?
Well, I really couldn't tell you because from what I understand, it's a shoot as far as what they tell the kids. Because Taylor was like, yeah, they didn't tell me anything. They didn't tell her that Joey Ryan was going to walk out in the middle of her segment. She didn't know much of anything. The vote was a shoot. She didn't know. I can tell you from that point that they thought highly of her because they put her with Tara. And in my opinion, Tara is one of the best wrestlers in the company for TNA. So I felt like she was in good hands. And for some reason, Dave Meltzer has a hates her and thinks she's ugly and all this. And I'm like, she's a pretty cute girl. I've known her for a long time. She's pretty attractive. So I don't know what he's seeing, but and he doesn't think she's any good. And I'm like, she's pretty good. You know why? Because I asked Tara, and Tara said she was good. That's good enough for me. So Tara gets my vote over Dave Meltzer. Sorry, Dave. Dave Meltzer's also the guy that a week and a half ago said Ring of Honor didn't have the horses to make it. And then, you know, after we had the good show, I tweeted to him. I said, Dave, we have the same horses that just had one of the best pay-per-views of the year. So, you know, I hope we don't turn this into a criticizing game where I'll start. Maybe I'll do a newsletter where I criticize everything Dave says every week, and we'll do that. So that'll be fun. No, that'd be boring for everybody. But
if he did it to Brian Alvarez, I'd buy it for sure.
Oh, stop it! You and Brian just should fight and get it over with, or dance, or whatever you're going to do. I don't know. But whatever it is, it has to end up with a big dance number at the end. We all know that. But I would just say that, yeah, the gut check thing, I know they liked Evan too because they told him so, and they put him with Doug Williams, and Doug's awesome. I've wrestled Doug, and I've wrestled Evan, and I really thought Evan did a good job. I know they told him that they would help him go to OVW if he wanted to. They'd give him like some sort of a scholarship or a tuition help with that if he could move his. I know he's in college right now. If he wanted to move his college down to somewhere in one of the schools in Kentucky, and he was thinking about it. I talked to him, actually. I saw him Sunday, and he said he hadn't quite. They told him to stay in touch, and he hadn't quite made that decision yet. He was going to still talk it over with his parents over the holidays and see what he wanted to do. But it seems like it's legit to a certain degree, but I don't know how they pick people. Like, I don't know how that works. Like, I don't know if they...
On TV, it can come off, the way they explained it, can come off kind of misleading because they say they get a contract, but we never see them again. And they aren't saying that, you know, they're going to OVW or anything. It's just... You got a contract, but we've never seen any of them again. So
right, and then I was under the understanding that this is talking out of school, but I don't care. I'm not in TNA. They made it seem like that it was going to be the usual contract of like whatever they give you, you know, a few $100 a match, but it's only when you work. So that's not a contract at all. That's just like a holding contract. That's nothing. But then I talked to Taylor, and Taylor said they are actually giving her a small weekly stipend every week when she trains at OVW. And I said, well, that's a better deal than if you were signed with TNA. So I said, you know, so just take that and, you know, work your OVW matches and do all that. So, you know, she still said that, you know, they still like her a lot and they still want to use her. It's just a matter of fitting her in. And I know they like Sam Shaw, and I like Sam Shaw too. I think Sam's great. Sam came to a couple of the Ring of Honor camps and really, really impressed us, and we were trying to make room for him. But so I met the other guy, the guy, Chris Louie, the one that didn't make it, but had a real interesting story. I met him somewhere. I can't remember where I met him. I think I met him at a Harley race camp a couple of years ago. He was a real nice guy, but I don't know. I don't think he was ready for that. I think it seems like he was kind of caught off guard with that one. Like maybe he was out of shape or he wasn't ready or I don't know. Somebody got in touch with him and yeah, I don't know. He didn't seem like in wrestling shape. Like he hadn't been wrestling very much. So I don't know.
What do you think about that being on live TV? Cause it's like just, you know, kind of throwing him out there.
I don't mind that.
That's because they showed his wife and kids, like right when they said no. I mean, I thought that was kind of low class.
Well, I mean, it is and it isn't. I mean, what's the difference between that and American Idol and America's Got Talent? And, you know, I mean, if you're going to put he could say no. He could say, I don't think I'm ready and I don't want to do it.
It was so much them telling him no. It's just because when they told him no, they cut straight to his family. And that was what I...
Well, if you were the director, you would have done it too. So I know you. You're a smart guy. You would have done it too. I'm not saying, it's a TV business and all, you know, and I'm not trying to be hard on the guy. I think the guy had a great story. And like I said, if it's the same guy I'm thinking of, he was a nice guy when I met him. But all he had to do to have that not happen is not invite his kid and his son to come. They could have been in the back watching, or they could have been at home watching. So if he didn't, you know, if he wanted to, I think he really thought he was going to do well. And maybe that's where the delusional part comes in, you know, because I'm almost 100% sure that it's the same guy. I've seen him do better in the past. So I don't know. I don't know what happened there, but he just didn't really seem very prepared. So, and if you're not prepared, that's what's going to happen. You know, I trained my ass off to be when I'd had my Ring of Honor chances. So there was nobody was going to take that away from me. So if I screwed up, that's one thing, but I wasn't going to screw up not being ready. Because you can always prepare. If you have time, you can always prepare.
Anything else, Kentrick?
Now, when did you start watching wrestling?
Me?
Yeah.
The Hogan era. I was born in 72, but I didn't start really watching wrestling until I was like 11 or 12, so probably late 83, 84. You know, the war to settle the score and the right before WrestleMania and all that stuff.
Were you more of a, you know, like the Mid-Atlantic or WWF fan?
Oh, no, WWF, because that's what we had up here. I didn't really know, I didn't really figure out that there was that real wrestling on TBS until probably fall of 85. So I was probably watching wrestling for almost a year before I caught the NWA. Then I followed the NWA. I watched both of them every week. I appreciated them for what they were. I didn't pit them against each other. But it was kind of, you also kind of were being a little anti-establishment and saying, oh, yeah, I like the NWA better up here, you know, because that's kind of the, you know, you'd be the outlaw, you know. Plus, wrestling was weird because it was really popular, but everybody thought it was, a lot of people thought it was stupid, too. So I don't know how it is now because I'm in the business, so they probably think we're all idiots. But I know back then they were like, oh, what do you watch that stuff for? And they would pull that stuff on me all the time. So my dad always used to come in and, oh, that stuff's all phony and all that. So, but now he actually goes to the matches once in a while. So.
Now, Bob, I wanted to ask you, you had mentioned on Facebook, you had made a comment that you thought we had heat. I was just wondering where that came from.
Oh, I was teasing you. I was teasing you.
Oh, okay.
I thought
it was because I was giving you a hard time for being on that Dirt Shimp Super VV show.
No. Ed, you can make fun of me anytime, man. That's fine. we'll dance this dance together. No, that's fine. I was just teasing you. I know, obviously, we don't have heat. No, I just hadn't talked to you in a while. So I was like, oh, man, we got heat. You're not talking to me. Kayfabing me. So, no, that's all.
Around that time, I came up with an idea for a gimmick change for you that's going to make you a big star.
Look out, Contreras. I've got an idea.
Right, so we got to get rid of the Evans part of the name.
Okay,
so it's gonna,
yes.
And we're going to get rid of the brutal part.
Uh-oh. All
right. It's going to be Bob Wildstar, the Star Blazer.
I like that. Actually, my brother was a bigger fan than I was, but he used to have it on all the time, so that song was just ingrained in my head. You'd think I was, like, the biggest fan of all time, because I used to be able to sing it from beginning to end. I can't anymore, but, yeah, my brother used to watch that show religiously, so it was on all the time in the house, because we only had one TV back then, so he'd be watching it, and he'd be on at, like, weird times, too. He'd be on at, like, 7:30 in the morning. Like right before we went to school, so I'd be tortured with that.
It was on like before the Bozo show.
Yeah, it was on.
WGN.
Yeah, it was. Well, we didn't have GN. We didn't have WGN here. It was actually on in Boston. It was on WFXT, which is now a Fox affiliate. I don't know what it was back then, but it was. It's quite the show, and I didn't realize until, like, you know, years later that how popular it was, how many people really liked it, you know, so, because I said, oh, maybe they'll have DVDs of this, and of course they had everything in the world of it, so, because I was going to get something from my brother, and he's like, nah, that's fine, I'm kind of over it,
they're all on YouTube, all three seasons are on YouTube.
Oh, cool, so I see, I can just tell them, hey, watch YouTube, there's your present, I gave you YouTube.
I actually just finished watching season two today.
Nice, you're refreshing yourself.
Yeah, I had seen it when I was a kid, when I was like in elementary, and then I didn't hear about it for like so long, but I always had the image of the ship, I always remembered it was a blue and red ship, and
mm-hmm.
I was always kind of like, every once in a while, pop in my head, and I didn't think about it until like I think Brian brought it up on the show a couple of years ago, and then a couple of weeks ago, me and Craig kind of got an argument on what was the best cartoon. He brought up Star Blazers, and I was like, yeah, whatever. But then after that, I kind of got it in my head. I went to YouTube, found the series, and it's like now I actually have to agree with Craig. It is like the greatest cartoon ever.
Well, and the thing is, it was way ahead of its time, and they actually had one of the major characters. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but we had one of the major characters pass away, right? Or they showed one of the major characters passing away, or something. I remember, and it was like a huge, like to me, that was like a huge thing for me. I was like, somebody died on a cartoon. That doesn't even make sense. Bugs Bunny gets thrown off a ledge and he's fine. So, so I think it kind of humanized everything too, you know. So it was, you know, it wasn't. In other words, it wasn't always like just blow each other up and everything's fine and everybody's great and it's all good. There was actually like actual humanity in it too, which I thought was kind of, you know, you look back on it now when you're older and you kind of go, wow, this is, geez, they were actually just going for real life stuff there, and it was crazy, you know. So
yeah, they have plenty of stuff for the kids, you know, a bunch of wackiness. But as far as when you really look at the storylines, I mean, they're pretty damn complex.
Oh yeah,
story,
I mean, like
stuff, yeah.
Yeah, they had, like, real, like, it was actually, like, a real show. And, yeah, it had its wackiness in there, but it's, you know, but that's life, too. You know, even the weirdest, even the most serious stuff always has, like, some jokes in it and stuff. So that's, you know, but, yeah, I agree with you. That was one of the, and like I said, even though it wasn't my bag as much as my brother's, I still developed an appreciation for it, so.
Yeah, I was actually, surprised when you had posted. I don't even know. I was just stoned one day and just watched an episode. So I had the song in my head, so I just wrote it down on Facebook. And right away you posted the video for the song. I was like, oh, wow, that's cool.
No, I had no excuse. I wasn't high at all. I was fine. I was right there. I was alert, and I was probably actually a little sleepy from work. But I said, gee, those words look familiar. And then I started, like, singing the song, and I was like, wow, that's the Star Blazers theme. Okay, so let me find this. And little gag on Ed. I'll help him out here. So,
Tim Horner was the Star Blazer in WCW in 1990.
Wow, that's right. That's right. And it didn't last very long. It lasted as long as Arachnaman.
That's right.
They should have teamed the Star Blazer and Arachnaman together.
Star Blazer and the Arachnaman did team together as their alter egos. But hey, did you guys hear about Mike Graham today?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
we talked
crazy.
About it at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, I'm sure you did, but it's I just didn't know any other way to segue into it. But it just reminded me of, like, that same era, because he was kind of, like, winding up his career back then. That's crazy. Like, he kills himself the same way. Like, that's nuts. Like, that's just crazy.
There's something about wrestling families that's just not healthy.
And there's something going on there, too, because I know, like, he had a part in some of those early, like, Legends roundtables and stuff, but everybody always seemed, like, really annoyed by him and didn't really seem to like him that much. I don't know, like, and then when his name is brought up, everybody rolls their eyes, and I don't know, it's like...
He made some comments, like, he innovated a bunch of stuff, and I think it blew up from there, like, he created professional wrestling or something like that. You know, they does have that win.
Oh, so he's one of those guys. He invented everything.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, you know.
I think maybe on the round tables, maybe the guys were saying, why is he here?
Well, I know, I can tell you why he was there, because he sold the footage to him, and that was part of it,
that's right.
He had to stay on. He said, I'm staying on for a year or two as something in this company, because I want some money. I want to earn a living in wrestling.
I've never bothered by him. He was, you know, he had good stories and stuff like that.
Oh, and he was a knowledgeable guy, too. I mean, I've actually heard he was quite a good agent as far as that stuff goes, and he was good in the office, so I don't know.
And anyone who's going to punk out a big-ass Sid Vicious,
that's,
you know,
true.
You got to throw some props out, too.
Hell yes. That's right. The squeegee incident. Mike Graham comes in, saves the day.
Yeah.
And he was in the weirdest. He was in the first Battle Bowl in 1991. Remember
that's right.
The match? It was Bill Kazmaier and Jushin Liger against Mike Graham and DDP. That had to have been a shoot drawing right there.
I think they were. I think they were. Like wasn't that the whole thing? Like, oh, they're just gonna draw it and they're gonna wrestle on the fly.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that. That's quite a cast of characters too.
Well, I think some of them might have been legit shoots, but I think some of them have to have been planned. Like the Cactus Jack Sergeant Buddy Lee Parker team had it been planned, because they set up the whole thing with Abdullah killing Buddy Lee in the dressing room, and then you had Buddy Lee making his valiant, like he crawled basically to get to the ring.
Well, that's true.
And then he gets there, and Cactus tags him, throws him in, and he gets pinned. And I was actually kind of disappointed because I was so excited that Buddy Lee Parker was on a pay-per-view.
Well, Buddy Lee wasn't crawling. He was just really short like that. That's why. So that's, yeah.
I found it funny that Jushin Liger, you know, it's like his first live pay-per-view ever in America. They should at least, you know, planned out that a little better. Maybe put him in there with Ricky Morton or Pillman or somebody like that.
I know. Well, Jushin Liger ended up being okay. So
yeah, he did okay for himself.
It'll make for, in his book, it'll be a funny story, if he even remembers it, so.
That's funny. So besides Iron Week and ROH, are you working any other companies?
I'm just some small stuff around here. Liberty States Wrestling and Peabody, Mass, which is outside of a little bit north of Boston. I do a lot of stuff at Top Rope Promotions, which is in Fall River, Mass. That's right near my hometown. That's actually real close, so it's nice. And I do probably the other one I do the most is PWF Northeast out of Providence, Rhode Island. So it's all pretty local stuff, and they treat me good, and they usually put me with guys that can benefit from my experience, and they try not to waste my time, and I try not to waste theirs, and it's good. I just go in, do my thing, and help out if they need me to help out, and do whatever I need to do, and shake hands and say goodbye for another month and go do my thing. So it's, like I said, I used to be very heavily involved in the independent political scene around here and got all kinds of heat on myself. And all it did is just give me a stomach ache and a headache. So it made me feel like Craig every day. So, okay. Craig does
now,
today. So
I actually just kind of thought of a question that might be a good question for you since you've been around for like 20 plus years.
Yes, sir. Fire away.
We, a few weeks ago, Davey Richards made the news because of the big heist.
Yes, about the big heist.
About a week ago, the local company here in San Antonio, they ran the show, and a day or two later, the promoter left the belt and some footage in his car, and that got busted into and robbed. And they think it's more someone kind of it was more of a dickish move than someone just robbing the guy. So my question to you is, have you ever seen or what's the shadiest or craziest story or have you ever seen anyone try and run out with the money? Have you ever seen anyone steal anything or just any kind of craziness like that?
Oh, yeah. I've seen a couple of buddies of mine went up to Canada we almost had to come up and go get them. We're about a 6-hour drive to Montreal from where I am, Kevin Steen territory. And this was years before. This was probably when Kevin was a baby. But the guys, a couple of buddies of mine went up, drove across the border. We're going to work a couple of shows and then go home. But one of the guys decided to walk up, punch the promoter's father was running the door. He walked up, punched the promoter's father in the face and left with his girl. The girl had the car running, and they just left and took off with the money. Just cracked him. As brazen as that. I've also seen it where that same guy actually ended up getting his a lot later, where a few other guys weren't getting paid, so they cornered him in the locker room, beat the hell out of him, and took their money for the night. So I've seen that. I've seen, it doesn't happen a lot. I mean, this is a couple times, and, probably been on 1,000-something shows, but it does happen, I've seen guys get arrested right in the middle of the locker room. One guy got arrested for statutory rape. That was, my first, 2 months in the business. And I'm sitting here, and all of a sudden I'm talking to the guy. I walk over, and, nice enough guy. And no names, please, but nice guy. And then nobody you would know. It's a very, very local guy. And all of a sudden, he's being taken away in handcuffs. And he's like, you need to come with us. I go, okay. And I was like,
wow.
Yep. So I guess you're not wrestling on the show tonight, pal. So, so I've seen that. Let's see. I don't know. I mean, most of the stuff has been, wacky stuff, but nothing. I saw one promoter go after Rikishi with a sword because he said Rikishi was screwing him, even though it was the other way around. But this promoter's done a lot of crazy stuff before, too. So, I've been double-crossed where, the guy beat me up a little bit because he didn't like me and then he didn't pay me that much. That was early on in my career. So, but it was, that's part of the fun of the business. So, but most of the experiences have been good, or at least funny. So, I mean, we've done the whole thing where we've driven 2-3 hours to a show. This is before the internet and before cell phones, where you drive to a show and, I didn't get in touch with you. Yeah, the show's canceled. So, we've had that happen too. So.
Now, that's another question that just popped in my head.
Sure.
Sunny's been making a bunch of news lately, and yep. I know she's in the northeast, and she's dating a young independent wrestler, Damian Darling. Do you know him? Have you worked with him?
Yeah, I know Damian. Yep, I know Damian. He's a really good guy. Actually, I've actually I do a business on eBay where I sell wrestling figures and I sell all kinds of memorabilia, and I actually bought some of his collection. And maybe 3-4 months ago, and he seemed like he was doing fine. So he's a good guy. So it's, and I'm not saying she's not a good person. I'm just saying she's got a lot of issues. So, but I never even knew he was dating her. I've never met her. So I don't know if it was before, but from what I understand, that's kind of her thing, like kind of latching on. So, you know, I hope I'm not offending her in any way, but.
I
guess that's kind of her thing.
She's had some very publicized, like, bad breakups. So, I mean, and she puts it all on Facebook herself. So, I mean.
Oh, well, there you go. So, I don't feel like I'm besmirching this young lady's reputation by any means. I might have shaken her hand once or twice, but that's the most of interaction I've had with her. And Damien I've known, yeah. Damien I've known for years, actually. He's a good kid, so. I don't know if he probably bit off more than he could chew, but I can understand that too. You know, she's a famous, very famous woman, attractive woman. I can see you getting mixed up in that if you're a young single guy. So, you know.
Well, hopefully this will end pretty soon and it won't get more out of hand than it has. I mean, because I'm one of the biggest Sunny fans in the world, but it's like gotten to the point where it's like I just shake my head and it's like I can only hope that it doesn't end badly. You know?
Well, and that's the thing. It's like it's you know, you look at her and you look at a few other people like Scott Hall and, you know, who supposedly is doing actually a little bit better, which is great, because Scott Hall actually was very kind to me and a couple of my friends when we were doing jobs back in the day. So I got nothing bad to say about Scott Hall. But, you know, you look at these people and, you know, like Jake and these guys, and it's like, you know, I hate to say it because I don't want to curse anybody, but it's almost like it's time, you know, is the time ticking away right in front of our eyes. And I think you guys know what I'm talking about. I just don't really want to say it, but,
yeah.
You know, is that what it is? Are we looking at like a countdown? Are we looking at somebody just self-destruct right in front of us? You know, when we finally get that call, like, oh, yeah, you know, Sonny didn't kick out this time. And it's like, oh, well, you know, like none of us are going to be, you know, I hate to say it. I hate to sound cynical and jaded, but none of us are going to be surprised. Are you really going to be surprised once that news hits the airwaves? I mean, is that going to shock you? You know, like I was a little shocked about Mike Graham today, but, you know, I don't know if I'd be shocked about Sonny or some of these other people that are always in the news, you know, just like if you heard about some of these people that get into trouble, you know, like, you know, all these celebrities that get in trouble on, you know, the girl Winehouse, you know, who was the singer there, who was always in a lot of trouble with drugs.
Did you know she was a member of the website?
I'm sorry?
Did you know she was a member of the website?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she had, I don't know if she was current when she died, but at one point she definitely had a sub to the Brian site.
I didn't know that. I didn't. I hope we're not giving away. Maybe Brian can give away his secret celebrity list of people. So Amy Winehouse and Bob Evans being two
over to drugs or something.
Yeah, I don't know. Contreras, what have you been up to, man? You know, you let Ed run the ship. I think that's the problem. You should run everything. You're better than he is.
Well, that's true.
So you just
there for the historical references.
I know.
I'm here
to
make sure everybody knows their shit.
Exactly. Straighten everybody's ass out. I understand. That's good.
I mean, Greg thinks that Kira Hakuto works in Tulalip and lives up there.
What is it? Say it again.
Greg thought that Kira Hakuto had a house in around Tulalip and worked Tulalip and up there in his neck of the woods.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had a show about 90s All Japan Women's Wrestling.
Oh,
and
nice.
What's her name?
Akira Hokuto.
No, not Akira Hokuto. The one you can beat support.
Malaya
Hosaka. Malaya Hosaka. God, I can't see her name.
Osaka?
Malaya Hosaka.
Yeah.
Layla Soccer worked for Kalalep a few times. Brian interviewed her, and so we were talking, and we started talking about Akira Hokuto, and Craig's like, oh, yeah, you know she comes and wrestles for Kalalep all the time. And we're like, I think you're talking about Malaya. And Craig's like, was just so insistent that it was Akira Hokuto that wrestled there.
He thought Tom Zink was a member of Strike Force, and that's when it all started with him.
And then you had to give him the Can-Am Connection Strike Force talk.
That's right. He hadn't given it down yet.
Yeah, we talk stuff that's more than 6 or 7 years old. Craig's kind of iffy on the knowledge.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of responsibilities.
Hey, real quick, Bob, I wanted to ask you, before you started doing the Iron Week stuff, did you work many 60-minute matches?
I worked, let's see, I did a couple of 45s. I always loved the Iron Man concept. That's one of the reasons why I do it. I loved it. And actually, the bootleg that is out there from Boston of the Ric Flair, Bret Hart, Iron Man match is taken by a 20-year-old Brutal Bob Evans. So don't tell. Don't tell WWF. But that was actually taped by me because I wanted to see it so bad, and I wanted to have a record of it, and I knew they weren't going to tape it because they were idiots back then and didn't tape all the cool stuff. There is actually a Bret and Owen one, too, somewhere in the bootleg, but it's never made itself onto YouTube, but I guess that match is amazing, too. And, you know, there were a bunch of them, and I know the first one I heard of, and I guess Patterson used to do it, and it was Patterson's idea because it was awesome, but... he'd had the Rougeaus and the Rockers do it all over the country.
Right,
and they were kind of like, I know the first like 15, 20 minutes of it were gaga and all that, but once they got into it, I guess the matches were really, really awesome. So, but I guess...
Have you ever seen the 1 hour, the 16-minute draw between Miami Toyota and Inouye?
I have not.
Okay, I'm going to send, I probably won't send it tonight, but tomorrow or in a day or two, I'm going to send you the links to this Iron Man match. This is the, I shit you not, Bob. I know you've seen some great Iron Man matches. Ric Flair's had plenty of them. This is the greatest 60-minute freaking match you'll ever see in your freaking life.
Now, I can probably tell you that I probably won't cut the same pace as some of these people do, though. So I hope nobody's mad at me for doing that, especially towards the end of the week. So I do have to work these at my own pace. So this will be a lot more classic wrestling than it will be, you know, I don't think we're going to be setting too many trends aside from making history, but I don't think I'm going to be setting too many trends for speed and quickness. I think it's just going to be skill and that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping it'll be a highly skilled week, but I don't know if it'll be a fast week.
What did you think of the Shawn and Bret Iron Man match? Because it's kind of like a controversial thing.
I liked it. I don't, and this is going to sound weird because they're two of my favorites. But I didn't like it as much as a lot of other people did. I don't think the crowd was really that crazy about it. That's why. And I know Dave said that people were like getting up and leaving because they were bored. And I think that the disrespect that they showed to the match somehow reflected on the way I felt about it later. I don't know. Like I just was like, I don't know. It kind of soured me on it. You know, it kind of bummed me out. As far as being a great match, it was a great match. And I bet if I went back and watched it, I haven't watched it in probably 10 years. And if I watched it now with a new pair of eyes, I'd probably develop a much better appreciation of it. Because everything I watch now is just so, like, even these silly, like, house show matches from 1984, 1985, you can learn so much from those just because it's just people that were all good at what they did. It was like, it's just weird now because, we all cry about the lack of talent. And you know, there's so many young guys and nobody's really – back then, everybody was pretty damn good at what they did. Even if you consider them, quote-unquote, boring or, you know, not that exciting or whatever, they were all good because they were all stars. Vince just went and cherry-picked everybody. So they were all great talent, you know, that could – and so that's – it was just weird to have a whole show with everybody pretty damn good at what they did. So, I mean, there were always some stinkers on the show, but – it was always like 8 or 9 matches. They're all pros on it. And it's like now it's like it's a lot of young guys leading young guys, you know, which I'm not saying they're not pros and I'm not saying they're not good, but it's just a different vibe. You know, when you can have a veteran guy kind of steer the ship and all young guy has to do is listen and sell and, you know, do his comeback, it's just so much easier for the young guy. So.
Sure. Since we only got about 10 minutes left, do you have any last questions you want to ask before we go?
Yeah, do you think that, like, the success of Punk and Daniel Bryan in WWE is a big motivation for the guys in ROH?
Well, I think one of the things that was interesting was that Regal said they were looking for more, because I don't know if you know this, I think you guys do, and please take my apology, I'm not trying to insult anybody's intelligence, but sometimes I think that things I know are things that you know and vice versa, you know? Like, hey, what about this Mike Graham thing? Yeah, Bob, we knew about it the whole day. Oh, sorry, guys. You know, like, but the William Regal now is basically your tour guide for the extras when you get there. In the old days, they just kind of had you sit around and maybe work out in the ring in front of a couple of agents. But now it's almost like you do a little William Regal seminar when you go, and it's much better for everybody. It gives Regal something to do because Regal always liked working out with the young guys anyway. And it gives the extras a plan of execution. They have something to do. It's productive. And then they'll work out in the ring in front of Regal, or they'll do promos in front of Regal, whatever the situation is. And he kind of, and of course they asked him, you know, what does it take to get signed? What does it take to get noticed? And he said, well, we're actually looking for a whole diverse group of guys now, and we're actually looking for guys who can work like Ring of Honor guys now. But I don't know exactly what that means, because I don't know what that means to Regal, you know, because I don't look at Brian Danielson the same way I look at the Young Bucks. You know, like the Young Bucks are very spectacular, but I look at Brian Danielson as more of like a technical guy. Not that Brian can't do some spectacular things, but I don't look at them in the same light, you know. So, but I think they're looking for more technically sound guys who can do some really cool spots and things like that. So that's my guess. So, yeah, I think, it motivates it because it proves that it can be done. And, you know, the short time I spent with Danielson and what I've heard about Punk, Punk seemed to have it a little harder because he was actually, you know, kind of like a trailblazer. And, you know, he made it happen. And then he kind of was doing well for himself, kind of settled down again, and then all of a sudden cuts that promo, and now, you know, and now he reached a whole new level. And Daniel Bryan was just really, it was just kind of a very slow ascension. But Daniel Bryan had done a slow ascension his whole career, if you watch it. So, I mean, it's just been, you know, starting slow and very, you know, just a slow climb to the top. And again, man, you know, just not getting any heat, just doing what you're told, and just, you know, but Brian had to change some shit up too. You know, he had to get better at promos. He had to bring something out in his personality. You know, he had to, because I remember he held a seminar that I went to probably literally a month before he went to WWE. He'd already been signed. And he said, look, I'm going to have to, you know, start getting tan. I'm going to have to start doing some of the things that I haven't done in the past. And, but he didn't say it like rolling his eyes all pissed off about it. He said it like, hey, this is what I have to do to make it, you know, and you guys should be doing it too. So it was very motivating. And he went in there with a very good attitude. And like I said, he's just, you know, I'm very happy for those guys. And it just shows that it can be done again. You know, and Tyro Black is knocking on the door. I'm sure he'll get a shot, and Claudio's in, and Hero probably get a good shot at trying to do something. So, I mean, there's plenty of guys that are there. And you know, and Sarah, from what I understand, Sarah's training the girls now. And that's a great spot for her because she has tons of experience. And, you know, and then if they need a good match out of somebody, they'll bring her up and give her a little, you know, one run. And, you know, they never say never. I don't think it's absolute anymore like it used to be. Find a 6'3 guy who's 250 pounds and wants to be on TV and we'll train him. I don't think that happens anymore. Because I think Triple H has more of a wider view of the business now, you know. And I know he brought Terry Taylor in as a consultant for a couple of days during the week, and I think that's going to help because Terry looks at all shapes and sizes, you know. And like I said, there's just not. I'm just hoping that there's not as much judgment, you know, as far as just dismissing people for body type or, and not because of me, because it's not really what I'm interested in doing, but you know, for maybe some guys that kind of, you know, could do something like a Sammy Callahan or like some of these other guys that just have something that, that other people don't have, and then we're going to dismiss him just because they don't fit into that. Well, he's not extremely muscle bound, and he's not 6.5 feet tall, and all this. So,
well, let me. I do have one more question, but let me throw out some plugs real quick before we go off our live feed. Everyone, check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a whole lot of shows. Pretty much a show every day of the week at AngryMarks.com, and. One thing that me and you have in common, Bob, is that we both, well, I think you've actually moved up to management and you're kind of the enemy now, but you have, you've been a paper boy for a good part of your life. And
14 years, my man.
14 years. I've been doing it. I lost track. I can't even tell you. It's got to be like 6 or 7 years since I've been doing it. But do you have, because I'm going to. Kind of weird late night animal story that just something happened that just like freaked you out?
Yeah, my first, I got out of papers for about a couple years, and I had been doing afternoon delivery because the paper I did was an afternoon paper, and then I got out of it for a couple years and I went back to morning delivery on another paper. And my first month in, my car was hit by a deer. Not the other way around. My car was hit by a deer because it looked like I was driving along in this real dark street in a country road. And, I threw a paper and I'm driving to the next street. And all of a sudden it looked like somebody threw it like one of those big like deer heads at you that people hang up on their walls from the side. But it was a whole deer. It just because all I could see was this big head. It looked like a moose and it just crunched the front of my car. So that was probably the worst. I mean, I've seen some weird stuff out there. I've seen a lot of, like, drunk people, and, you know, I've been solicited by some working women, and at least I think they were women. I'm not really sure, but, you know, that's happened, and, you know, some homeless people have asked me for a ride and, you know, things like that, so, but there's, but there's a lot of that stuff, so.
You ever run into any raccoons?
Yeah, I actually hit one. Let's see, just a little while ago. Kind of ripped up my front end a little bit. So, took him with me for about a mile on the highway.
Well,
it's not my idea of a good time either.
Yeah, but I got a story about a raccoon, and I refer to this raccoon as Brockoon, because this is the freaking Brock Lesnar of raccoons. And, I don't see a whole lot of them on my paper. I see a lot of skunks, actually, is what I'll see. But you'll see the occasional raccoon. And the neighborhood is kind of a quiet neighborhood, but there's always, like, packs of dogs hanging out on different streets, different blocks. I'm going to Sunday paper. I'm going kind of slow. I know that further down this block, there's a pack of dogs that's always down there. And I'm hearing a lot of barking, so I'm figuring it's just them, maybe a couple blocks. But then in the corner of my eye, I see, like, five raccoons walking across the street. And there's a little, tiny little poodle-type dog who's barking at them. And the lead raccoon just alters his or her course. And the way he's, like, walking, he looks exactly like Pepe Le Pew when he's chasing a cat. You know how he's, like, hopping all calm and cool? So he takes, like, about... three of these, like, little hops towards the little dog. And right when it gets to the dog, he goes from Pepe Le Pew to the freaking Tasmanian devil.
Oh.
So he, like, just, boom, he jumps on this little dog, and within seconds, this little dog is just screaming. And you can, I guess the pack of dogs down the street hear, so they come running. I can hear, like, the dogs running. I just stop my car, and I'm watching. And... kind of a smaller-sized dog, medium-sized dog that comes hauling ass, barking, rah, and comes at the raccoon. A raccoon takes two hops, just like Pepe Le Pew, and same thing, just unleashed on this dog, and that dog starts screaming. And then a bigger dog comes running up, and he's all barking, all rowdy, and the raccoon, he grabs him, and he starts tearing him up. And then the next dog to get there is pit bull, and this pit bull comes in, like, rah. And then within seconds, the pit bull was like, And, I mean, this raccoon was just whipping some fucking ass, and then two more dogs kind of got there, and that's when they finally all kind of, like, converged on him, and he jumped on the fence because it was right next to, like, a house with a fence. Not a high fence, but one of those, like, 2 or 3 foot fences.
Right.
He jumps on the fence. He puts out, like, one paw. He hitches one last time. And then he jumps over the fence and takes off. And then when I drove by, these dogs were, like, all scratched up, bleeding everywhere. I mean, this little fucker, he fucking, their ass. I only wish I had it on video camera, but it was like, I just sat there in my car with my mouth open, my eyes wide open, just watching this, the carnage.
And
stuff. And that's like the craziest paper route story that I have.
That sounds like something that if we went out with Cotrera in the bar, I think if some people started messing with him, I think he'd start tearing people up like that too.
We don't have any drinks.
I've actually made it sure that probably wouldn't happen.
I don't know, man. It's those quiet ones you always got to watch out for.
I feel more comfortable with Craig, because Craig's like 6'4 and like 500 pounds.
I know, he's a big dude. I know that much.
Yeah.
So. Well, you guys coming out to WrestleMania, New Jersey? Because I'm gonna try to come down and meet everybody if I can. So.
Which show are you going to? There's so many.
Well, I'll be at the Ring of Honor deal on Friday, but I think I'm gonna try to go down there and maybe like stay over or go down there again on the weekend and just see if we can all meet up. You know, it's only about 3.5 hours for me, so it's not too bad of a drive. And plus, it's like I always missed up chances to meet with you guys, so I want to, you know, hang out and finally meet you guys face-to-face, you know, so.
Well, I don't think it's true, but I'm definitely going, and I think all the guys from the website, we're all staying at a hotel in New Jersey.
Nice.
That's not too far from the airport, and not too far from the train station, so it should be pretty cool. I plan on going to Ring of Honor. I plan on going to Shimmer. I plan on going to Chikara. And then probably the Hall of Fame and WrestleMania. Got heat with Gabe, so I'm not giving Gabe none of my money.
Yeah, man. Gabe was actually, I'm very grateful to Gabe. He was one of the guys that gave me my first chance at a dark match in Ring of Honor. And then, like, when he left, and then, like, I started jumping on with Ring of Honor. Like, he unfriended me on Facebook. And I'd, like, because I knew he had a baby about the same time my daughter was born, roughly, and I just, you know, I'd always, you know, how's the baby doing, how's everything, and he wouldn't get back to me, like, kayfabe me. It kind of bummed me out. You know, I'm not mad at it. I just kind of bothered me, you know, and then I know he was posting a lot of shit about Ring of Honor, and I was like, hey, man, you know, it's like everybody here appreciates what you did, and nobody here's got heat with you. Like, it's not like it's a big Gabe shit on Gabe Fest. I don't think I've ever heard anybody say a bad word about him. Even Kerry and these guys are supposedly still, you know, have some bad feelings towards him, you know, or he has bad feelings towards them. I've never heard anybody say a bad word about the guy. So, you know,
he's just super sensitive, you know.
I understand that. You know, hey, look, man, I've been fired from booking jobs around here for a lot less money and a lot less fame, and I was pissed off about it too. So, you know, it's I get it, you know, but eventually, you know, and I also get the fact that he wants to come back and whip everybody's ass and show him that he can do it too. That's great. You know, that usually makes you a better person, but it's like, it just bummed me out that, you know, this guy who I liked a lot, you know, and he liked me and I thought we were actually friends. And then he just cut off the relationship. And I was like, look, dude, you know, I was sad about it just because, like, I always thought he was such a good guy. And like I said, he had done me some, you know, done some favors for me, and I was always grateful to him for it. So opening that door for me. So.
Yeah, he well, like I'm not sure if you know, but most of the listeners know that, you know, he kind of snubbed us twice on being on the show.
No, I do know that, because I remember one day you were cutting like this huge, because I try to listen to the show as much as I can, and I remember you were cutting this huge promo on him.
I cut the promo on him, and then, like, you know, on the board, every once in a while I'd take a little snapshot, just, you know, mainly just trolling, having fun. And then there was like, and this show, we have a nice little following. We're not Brian, we're not Dave, Brian,
that's okay,
Chris, any of these major guys, but he still was so upset about it that he was doing a figure four with Brian, and he literally tattletailed on me to Brian. And it's like, you're not making yourself look good by responding to me. You know what I mean? It's one thing for me, you know, because this is just a little Mark show.
Right.
But when, you know, he went out and did that, it's like, to me, it's like, man, you just, you know, I lost a lot of respect for him when he did that more than when he no-showed the show for one time.
Well, I can tell you that when you get mixed up in that stuff, that sometimes the biggest reason why you're not progressing in your own life is because you just look at that shit just ties you down, man, you know? Like, not you personally, but I mean just, you know, all of us. We've all gone through that. You know, you just kind of, you know, like a girl leaves you or whatever, or a company fires you or something happens in your life, you get into a beef with somebody and you just can't shake it because it's just so, it just eats you up inside. But you just have to, you know, you just have to get through it and have to keep moving on and figure out another way. He's a smart guy, you know, so.
Yeah. But Bob, you've been on the show for quite a long time. We really appreciate that.
I know. I was supposed to get off quick, and then you guys are always so welcoming. It's always great to be on, so I'm glad we had a chance to talk, you know. So, but, yeah, let me just run by the Iron Week, if you guys don't mind.
Go ahead. Feel free to plug everything you got.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, you know, obviously ROHWrestling.com, that's separate. Ring of Honor is very supportive of me as a person and as a talent, but they are not officially supporting Ring of Honor. Like, I mean, they're not officially supporting Iron Week. They're not, like, putting money behind it or anything, but they're supportive of their talents doing other things, unlike other big companies. So they're excited for me in that, obviously, because, you know, their booker's wrestling me and a bunch of their guys are wrestling me. So but it's November 25th through December 1st, and I will have a Kickstarter going up, and I'll send you that info when it does come up. If you could, it would be great if you could make a mention of that for me. I'm sorry I don't have it set up now, but they actually do a screening on you to make sure you're not just taking that money and putting it in your pocket. So, but we're actually going to use it to just pay the travel expenses and pay the, I want to pay the guys a little something so they don't lose money doing this deal. And then we're going to do a webcam. I'm going to hire a very small production crew, a couple of guys, camera guys that I know from around here, pay them slave wages to go around and just tape some stuff and then try to whack it up and make a web reality show and put it online. So, and I'm not looking to charge anybody for it. I want everybody to see it for free just to see what it is, you know, maybe do some DVDs and stuff like that down the line. But I want to do that. So, but it's, just go on Facebook, Bob Evans, you'll see me, probably one of the more prominent ones aside from the restaurant. And then it's, at Brutal Bob Evans on Twitter. You can always talk to me there. If you have any questions about Iron Week. And then, like I said, I'm really going to start the publicity rolling with it. And you see me every week on ROHWrestling.com and our, you know, Ring of Honor TV with the lovely Maria Kanellis and the lovely prodigy Mike Bennett. So
now speaking of, when can we expect to have Maria on the show?
I did actually tell you that. I will try to make that happen as soon as I can. Are you going to behave yourself?
I will try. I might set the show where it's only me and I leave Couture and Craig off.
I don't know about that. Maybe it should be the other way around. I think Couture would be more of a gentleman than you. I don't know.
Now, right. I'll be on my best behavior. We've had a few girls on the show before. You know,
they've never returned to the show. So I tell you,
true. That's true. And they've mostly had bad things to say about you. So
Trina Michaels did the show twice. Yeah, it's nothing but good things to say to me. And in fact, I actually did those interviews in person, which was
awesome
and intimidating.
From her hotel room on her bed, I'm sure.
I wish at that point. There was one time I was the last one I was interviewing outside one of the local shows here, and I was kind of like leaning against the wall, and I had like a little tape recorder, and she starts kind of like staring at me. I think she was messing with me too. She starts, like, leaning into me, and it's like, I was just, like, so freaking intimidated trying to do this interview.
Wow. I'm glad I didn't start singing to you there, then. That's good. And leaning into
you. Maybe those interviews, I was expecting a quick call from San Antonio Police Department or something. Just one phone call.
I will make every attempt to make that happen. She's usually pretty good if I ask her to do her a favor for a friend and say that there's a couple of good guys here that ask good questions, and you know, she's pretty supportive of, obviously she's supportive of her man, but she's supportive of me as well. So she and I have become pretty good friends. She's got a hell of a head on her shoulders too. Aside from the physical beauty, she's actually a real good person inside and very down to earth and very bright too. So it's been, like I said, man, it's, you know, for all the company-wide stuff in Ring of Honor, it's been a real good year for me personally, so I can't really bitch too much, you know, so. And if I did, you guys would tell me to shut up anyway, so.
One real tiny quick question before we go. Speaking
sure.
of Maria, is Maria an actual ROH paid performer, or is she just doing it all for Mike?
Maria is from what I understand, she gets a check from Ring of Honor all the time. Now, I don't know how much that is. I don't know if she's worked out a deal. I know what she gets for personal appearances. I think that she's probably giving them the hometown discount, if you know what I mean, and making it work. So she can, because a lot of the times with their crazy schedules, there's sometimes when they live together in the same city for a while, and there's sometimes when she's in Chicago, he's in Boston. There's sometimes where they're both in L.A. There's sometimes when they're both in over here, you know, in Boston and New England, and there's sometimes when they're back in Chicago. And I know she's been going through some stuff. She's been trying to move out of her house in L.A. and might maybe move into another place because she doesn't need all that space now. And you know, it was, I don't know all the situation, but I know there was a lot of upheaval going on. So she's trying to make all that work. And so it's been kind of a tumultuous time. And I know she's got some other, she always has like a lot of business interests because she's, but I've also learned that through her that the Hollywood world is about like the wrestling world where they go, oh yeah, man, we're really interested. Sure. And then it's on their time, not on your time. So it could be 6 days, it could be 6 months, it could be 6 years before something happens. So, but she's just plugging away and doing her thing, and you know, she's been a great team player and been a great asset to Ring of Honor, and like I said, very supportive of the product, very supportive of the guys. So, you know, nothing but a positive role model for everybody. So,
awesome. Well, like I say, thanks again, Bob. We really appreciate you being on the show, and we'll. Look forward to having you on more often.
Absolutely, guys. And like I said, I probably won't talk to you too much aside from email, but want to wish you guys and your listeners happy Halloween. My son's 6th birthday is Halloween, and wish you guys a great holiday season. But we'll be in touch before then and in some capacity. But I do appreciate you guys being on. And like I said, I extended my time here because I like you guys so much and have so much respect for what you do. And hopefully we'll do this a little more often. So.
All right. Thank you.
Cool.
All right, guys, have a great night. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Bob. Well, that was a cool interview. Did you have anything you wanted to talk about before we end the show, Couture?
No.
Cool. Yeah. Go ahead and start.
What?
Steam music. Or what?
What'd you say?
I said I can't really think of anything right now, so let me just find the theme music and we'll go ahead and end the show here.
All right.
Man, I always have a hard time with this goddamn. You know what? I'm just going to end it with this.
Okay.